Welcome to episode 60 of Eat, Drink, Write, and Urban Fantasy Whiteboard. That blows my mind. 60.
60.
Yeah, Daddy says we're big boys now.
We're very good at talking, is what we are.
So today we thought we would just do an overview of character archetypes.
Yes.
because we've done a couple episodes on different ones, but there are so many out there. We thought we would just do an overview of what there are out there. And this is by no means a comprehensive list today.
There are so many. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But before we get to that, how was your week?
I don't remember Monday because I had to give a talk and apparently my brain decided that was too traumatic. It went very well. I vaguely remember giving the talk. I don't remember the rest of the day. But my teacher said that I did very well. So I guess that's good. And that is like mentally exhausting and stressful. So of course I did my typical stress responsive writing a lot. I just surpassed 30,000 words on the second book of Louis and Delaney. So,
that is amazing.
Yeah. And it's really exciting. And I'm not like slowing down at all, which is so strange. Cause like usually I'll get, you know, up to 15,000 words and I'll be like, okay, well, I don't really know what happens next. I need to think about it and outline. And that has not happened yet. So
very nice.
The characters are doing very well at talking to me. Cause that's, I was working on Aiden a while ago, hit 18,000 words. And now I'm like stuck. Like, I don't really, like, I'm not stuck. I kind of know what I want to do with it, but like, I just, it's not working with me. Whereas Louis and Delaney are just, they
won't
shut up. So
do you think that's because you've already written book one? So much of it is already set that it's just easier to write, or?
It might be. Cause like, I know those characters super well, but like, I still usually stall on like plot points and stuff, like where I'm like, oh, I don't know what exactly needs to happen in order to get to this point that I can see that it will happen at the end of the book or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they've been very cooperative, so I'm thankful for that.
Nice.
So it's been a relatively good week, but I don't remember some of it.
My week, we had chaos court all week, so I am exhausted. I did have some time today to play with my Cricut that I got for Christmas. I've been making wine glasses. So maybe at some point we can drink out of wine glasses I've made during our episodes. That would be kind of fun.
That would be lovely.
Speaking of drinking during our episodes, what are you eating and drinking?
I'm not eating because I'm not a college student. I'm going to claim college student. I don't have any good food to make right now. So I'm going to cry grad student there, but I'm drinking English breakfast tea. So my typical tea that I drink, I think I'm a little excitable already. So we'll see how extra caffeine does for me.
I'm actually drinking tea too. We're recording at an odd time for us because I had court all last week. So I didn't really want to get drunk. I mean, some days I do, but today I didn't really want to get drunk at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Fair enough.
So I am drinking English breakfast tea as well.
Oh, wonderful. We're twinsies.
We are. And I'm drinking out of my Eat, Drink, Write podcast coffee mug that we got for those of you.
Oh, watching. It's so cute.
It is cute. So that's our little logo. I have jokes.
Oh, of course. Let's kick it off.
And I actually found some decent ones given our topic. I was looking for character type jokes.
Oh, good.
So the first one, virtually every Harry Potter character can teach us a lesson. For example, Barty Crouch Jr. taught us that drinking can make you moody.
That was a good one.
I was so pleased with that one. Arnold Schwarzenegger gets a call from his agent about a feature-length film based around classical music. When asked which character he'd most like to play, he said, "I'll be Bach."
Oh, God. All right. Also a good one, but bless.
And then the last one, why was Game of Thrones banned from Twitter?
Why?
Because Twitter has a 140 character limit.
Okay. All right.
Right? I thought that was pretty good.
That's clever. It is clever.
Okay. So character archetypes. What is a character archetype? It is a common character, image, symbol, or situation that occurs in literature and in life and is considered to be universal across most cultures.
Nice.
It is a literary device which a character is created based on a set of qualities or traits that are specific and identifiable for readers. It can be a recurring symbol or motif throughout literature that represents the universal patterns of human nature of that particular character that you are writing about. Right. Yeah.
Like that brand of character.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. And then like you said earlier, we've done a couple of episodes highlighting some of these archetypes. I know we did the mentor character and the sidekick somewhat recently.
I feel like we've done another one, but I can't remember off the top of my head. I thought
have we done love interest yet? Because I know that's going to be one.
I don't know. But anyway, okay. I remember those two for sure, the mentor and the sidekick.
Yeah.
Also, just be aware, this is not the same thing as a stereotype. In fact, you don't want it to be a stereotype.
Right.
You do want your character to have that's, you know, recognizable to your reader right off the bat, but you don't want it to be a boring cliche.
Right. Yeah.
You can use the archetype actually as a way to shake things up. So think about Twilight, which I know some people don't like that set of books, but what she did was she took that vampire cliche and that vampire characteristic that we all as readers have in our mind, and she turned it up. She made them sparkly. You know, it wasn't like they would disintegrate in the sun. They just couldn't go in the sun because they would be outed as something non-human.
Right. Yeah.
So you can take those archetypes and make them into something else. You don't want to keep them stereotypical. Sometimes the stereotypical one can be used if you're trying to make a point.
Right.
You know, there are times and places for the stereotypes. There's a reason that they're stereotypes.
Yeah, exactly.
There are literally hundreds of archetypes. And I found this really neat article on industrialscripts.com. And it was an article on 201 archetypes.
201. That's 201. So many.
And I was like, wow. And as I read through it, a lot of them can actually be kind of boiled down into a more broad
thing. Yeah.
But it was fascinating to read that. So go look that up if you're looking for different ideas. Industrialscripts.com.
That's awesome. You
can also create a master list for yourself in your journal that we talked about. We did an episode on the writer's journal. That would be a great place to write down archetype characters that you think you might want to use, or little comments about traits that you might want to use and what archetype character would that trait most commonly go with.
Right.
Depending on what you need in your book. They can be both allies and or enemies, and protagonist and antagonist, you know. So just because you have the hero, there's also an antagonist form of the hero.
Right. Yeah.
So, and they can be used for allies and enemies. So let's just jump into some types. The leader is a very common.
It's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. And the traits of a leader are generally they're confident, they're inspiring, they are committed, they're passionate about whatever their goal is.
Yeah. I think this leader archetype is like, it's the character who develops like a following of people around them using like relationship oriented focuses and like ability to create a vision and like inspire people to that vision. And yeah, because like you said, they're inspiring and confident and all that. So they have like all these people that are willing to follow them for their own vision.
Which is a perfect example of one that can be both antagonistic and protagonistic. You think of Voldemort in the Harry Potter series. He was definitely a leader.
Absolutely.
You know, he had that huge following, but by the same token, you can have it be the protagonist, and like Aragorn in the Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Well, his arc kind of grew into the leader role. He started off as like a loner, but he grew into that leadership role. And he was a protagonist.
Yeah. And then think of like Bran from the Mercy Thompson novels. Like he leads the werewolves of the entire continent of North America.
That is a great example. I didn't even think of him.
Yeah. So what is he called? The Maroc, I think, is like his title, but he's a very like obvious leader archetype. I think.
I mean, Adam as well is a leader.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess any of the werewolf alphas are leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have all that same the same traits where they inspire people to follow them.
Yeah.
The next one is the loner/outcast. This is someone who never quite seems to fit in anywhere. They often have gifts or characteristics that they don't see in themselves that other people see.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think they live outside of society's norms. And I feel like a lot of the time this character is like pushed out of those norms, like specifically by society. They're like, okay, we don't like you because you're different for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So we push you out. And then, you know, they're unable to work with society because of those reasons.
You know, I hadn't thought of this when I was writing it, but what you just said made me think of the Divergent series.
Oh, yeah.
The Divergents themselves are mm-hmm. outcasts because they don't fit into any of the little classes that
absolutely
are within that. And so,
right. And again, like Mercy herself is an outcast. She, true. First of all, grew up with werewolves and then was pushed out because it was dangerous for her. She was going to get killed eventually if she stayed. So,
well, not even that. She starts off in the human world and gets pushed out of that
because yeah, true.
Her mother can't handle her. So true. She is pushed out of all. There is no place for her to fit.
Poor Mercy.
I know, right? These characters convey a palpable sense of mystery. It is a great way to use that in your novel to create a depth of unknown and intrigue in your reader.
Yeah.
Because there is so much about them that you don't know. There was a movie I watched. It was a weird Netflix movie. It was more like a Courtney movie. And they were... out there was a character in there that was an outcast, but it was all a lie as to, you know, society thought she was outcast for this reason. So everybody was, you know, spit on her and all of that. But the truth, that was a lie conveyed by these people in society that didn't want her. She was dangerous to them.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so she was an outcast. And so that's a great mechanism to use in an urban fantasy or any kind
absolutely.
Of fiction to have what the reader believes to be true, not be true later on. And in the form of this loner and outcast is a great way to do that.
Yes.
I was also thinking when I was writing this, the one that came up to my mind was that old man Marley in Home Alone. Remember that old man that the little boy ended up in the church with and everybody was afraid of the old man. And
yeah.
He was this outcast and he turned out to be a wonderful human being. It was just the conception of him was of an outcast, but he played an important role in that movie and helping the Home Alone kid.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Move that plot forward. The bully.
Mm-hmm.
So the bully gives an audience someone to hate. It's a focused object of personal loathing, which, you know, everybody, even bullies themselves, I think at some point have been bullied.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So it's something that your reader is going to understand right off the bat, immediately make that connection with what this character is meant to portray. It also can be used to make your protagonist's goodness or good traits stand out because it's such a contrast to what this bully is doing.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I think this archetype would be a good setup for a redemption arc. I'm a sucker for redemption arcs.
Me too. I like that.
And I think, yeah. And I think the bully, you know, cause they're so, and they do it a lot, you know, like the bully realizes, oh, I'm only being mean to you because I was, you know, bullied mm-hmm. as a kid, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But I think like this archetype as a whole would be good for a redemption type story mm-hmm. in my opinion.
So maybe yeah. Especially when, you know, some of bullying is not forgivable. But it, right. that redemption arc allows you to see why. And even right. though their behavior shouldn't be forgiven, it becomes understandable and right. not acceptable, but understandable. And then we can move on.
And right. And move on that now character. That their behavior mm-hmm. has changed or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Biff and Back to the Future is a really good example of the bully. You remember Back to the Future?
I don't. It's been so long since I've like literally probably 20 years since I've watched it. So mm-hmm. it's been a long time.
He was definitely a bully all the way through. And it was interesting with that series of movies, how time, you know, this time travel that they did changed things
mm-hmm.
and how that bully was sometimes not necessarily a bully depending on what happened in which time frame.
Yeah.
The bully has a lot of uses as well.
Absolutely.
The con artist.
I love con artists.
Me
con
too.
Artists.
Me
I think,
too.
They're a lot of fun.
Their traits are, they are very persuasive. They are great liars. They have no issue lying. Like for me, I can't tell a lie to save my life.
Me neither.
They're very convincing. They're amoral. They're generally selfish.
Yeah. But on top of that, they like pose as a trustworthy person.
Yes.
So like you said, like they're a great liar. So they like try to be, or try to appear as a trustworthy person, seeking other trustworthy people who will like rely on their good faith and everything. And really they're just like you said, amoral and selfish. And
we're watching, I think I said this last week, we're still watching Shameless.
Ah, yes. Oh, yes.
We are on season 6 now, I think.
Already? I know. Okay.
But Frank Gallagher is the perfect example of a con. And he's brilliant on top of being a great liar, persuasive, convincing, amoral, and selfish.
Yeah.
He is super smart. And I think that is a great characteristic of a con artist. They have to be able to see, well, maybe they just need to be able to read people well.
That's true too. Yeah. I think you could probably play it a couple of different ways.
Yeah. But that is the best con artist character I have ever seen in my entire life.
He's insane. Yeah.
And then Cressley Cole, going back to kind of to our roots, the urban fantasy, she, in her erotica series, there's a whole book of her 3 series erotica that she did. That's all about a family of con artists.
Mm.
Oh, and nice. It is so well done. She can write it. It's brilliantly done. And so that's one of my another favorite con artist book that I have.
Yeah.
It can be useful for both the protagonist and the antagonist to have con artists in their repertoire, in their followers.
100%. Good for them. And I think also good for the reader. The Throne of Glass series, a lot of the protagonist's plans and stuff that she does involves like con artistry and like that kind of stuff. And you never know what she's planning until she does it. And it's one of my favorite things about that series is like, I think it's in like book 4. She does something where I'm like, oh my God, like she did this whole thing. And then the same in book 6, like she does another thing and you're like, she was planning that the whole time.
Yeah.
And you don't even realize it.
The long con is the best thing to use in books because it catches your reader and you're like, you know, and that Cressley Cole book, yeah, it had a long con in it
too.
And oh, just amazing.
So good.
That it definitely is useful. The love interest, the traits of the love interest, really, it isn't about the love interest themselves. It's more about the character who's interested in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this is the person that the main character or whoever has the love interest is willing to go through any lengths possible to get this person, to be with them, to save them, whatever it is their goal with this love interest. So
absolutely.
Not necessarily that the love interest themselves have specific traits. It's more the people who are in love with them that you look at, because whatever it is that causes the attraction and whatever it is that causes them to love that person.
Right. Speaks about your main character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found this quote while I was researching for this, and it was the personification, the love interest is the personification of the ideal mental and emotional balance that the writer hopes for the future of your protagonist, which I thought was really interesting. Because again, like you said, it speaks to the characteristics of the main character, but it also speaks to the kind of future that you want your main character to have.
I love that.
Yeah.
That
and then
is great.
Yeah. And related, I'm in the Patricia Briggs fan groups or whatever on Facebook. And so someone is rereading Moon Called right now, which is the first one. And he posted a snippet about Mercy, and she's in the van with Adam and Samuel. And so, Samuel says something along the lines of, oh, you shouldn't get involved in werewolf affairs. You're too weak, blah, 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 something along those lines. And then Adam goes, I don't know, she holds her own. And so like, you know, they've set up, Patricia Briggs set up this love triangle kind of from the beginning. And you get these two different sides of what Mercy would be with.
I had not thought about that, but that is perfect to explain that quote. Because what do we want for Mercy? We don't want someone who thinks of her as weak and needing to be taken care of and coddled. And that's not Mercy.
Right.
And so for Adam to view her and say, hey, she can hold her own. That's awesome.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So
that is awesome. The Fool. This is one of my favorites. The traits are they're actually the comic relief and they're fun and they bring fun to any situation through their own seeming lack of intelligence, which isn't necessarily true, or lack of common sense, or sometimes as a means to make themselves look like a fool in order to have some other goal come about. They're willing to make themselves look foolish to divert the anger so someone doesn't get beaten up, or whatever their goal might be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fool's job is to deflate that ego of those in power. To
Definitely.
say like in jest, like you said, bring comic relief, kind of like poke fun, what needs to be said and no one else is willing to say out loud, but they'll say it and they'll say it in kind of like a funny, like foolish manner, like you said. And then also like, again, like you said, they're not necessarily an idiot or they're not necessarily naive or stupid. In fact, they can be very clever and wise. And they're also sometimes known as the trickster character. Like they're willing to deceive others, but in a way that furthers the goals and stuff of the book.
You know who I think of kind of as the fool, although he's definitely not foolish, in Teen Wolf,
Oh, Styles.
Styles, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And he's not dumb at all.
No, he's very smart. That's a really good example. I actually like that as an
Yeah,
example.
me too. I hadn't thought of it until just now either. They tend to enjoy the simple, innocent, playful things in life, or at least they're able to see, where sometimes your main character's issues are so deep they no longer can see that fun and happy side of life. There's just too much going on. And this character can bring back that innocent, playful part of life that is there. We just sometimes are too focused on other things to see it. And I think that's very important as well. And then they challenge the authority around them. They sometimes become the conscience of others around them based on how they are reacting to the situation. They bring everybody back to the core of what's needed to be seen right now. Because you could have all your characters scattered and unfocused and all this stuff, and they're, oh my God, we're going to die, or I'm not going to be able to save her in time. And this fool character is able to refocus everybody on the here and now, which is super important. Just like Styles was great in doing that in Teen Wolf.
Yeah, the more that you talk about this, the more that I'm like, Styles is absolutely the full character, but like in a really good, smart way. Also, Xander from Buffy, I think.
Oh, good point.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think he would also be a good example.
And Dory from Finding Nemo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although she comes across as dumb, but
She does, but still, she like focuses, what's his name? Marlon?
But yeah, her purpose is to keep everything in perspective and to be there as support. That's another thing that a lot of these characters can do. The muscle. The traits of the muscle are they're usually strong. They're a lot of times portrayed as not being intelligent. They're there for protection, whether they're hired or whether they take on that role themselves for whatever reason. I'm going to protect my little brother, whether the little brother wants it or not.
Yeah, definitely. I think that this is also like a you could fit a bunch of different archetypes, like you said, into this one. So like, the warrior, the brute, the fighter type, like the physical strength and the prowess. But the main thing that I saw, like as I was researching this, was like they're willing to stand up for the things that they believe in. So like you said, if they have a little brother to protect, then they'll protect him no matter what, like whether the little brother wants it or not.
And if they're a mercenary, they're doing it for the money, but they're going to still do it because that's
But
what
it's
they were paid to
what they
do.
believe in.
Yeah, this is what I'm here for. It makes me think of the Dragonlance series, which I think I've said before was the very first fantasy series that I read. It's based on Dungeons and Dragons. And the character Sturm Brightblade, I think was his name, is definitely the muscle, but he was also a paladin. If anyone plays D&D, they know the paladin is the chaos, lawful good. And so they're not the muscle in that they're mercenary or anything like that. And he also wasn't portrayed as being very smart, but was a very useful character in making things happen in the story that needed to happen. He was a great character to play that conscience, and this is the right way to do it. And this is, you know, so right. All of these archetypes have a use.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to have all of them. You don't have to have, you know, a certain number of them. There's no rules. It's just, these are helpful to have. The muscle in Harry Potter, Draco's goons. What were they? I don't remember their names.
Crabbe and Goyle.
They're the muscle. And they are portrayed as not being very intelligent, but they're there to protect Draco.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, those are the, and they were useful in throughout those books.
Yeah. And that's also a good example of how, you know, antagonists or enemies can also be fulfilling of these archetypes.
Yes. Yes. So just to list a few, there's so many, we can't go into detail on all of them in this episode, but what we're probably going to do is do single episodes on each, on some of these, later
archetypes.
On.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the crazy cat lady.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The Robin Hood type characters steal from.
That's actually a really good one. I would love to cover the Robin Hood type characters.
The wild card, which is really exciting from the reader point of view, because you don't know what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
And that is exciting. The sidekick, which we already did. The rebel.
Uh-huh.
The confidant, which is, we covered under sidekick as the friend right. Sidekick.
Yeah.
The guardian, which a guardian could be, there's so many different ways you can have a guardian.
Right.
You know, in Shameless, which is on my brain right now, Fiona becomes their guardian. She is a different type of guardian than the dad figure or the mom figure, who were horrible people.
Yeah.
But at one point or another, they were all at some point guardians.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many different ways you can fulfill the guardian role. You can have a guardian who is a jerk, like a foster parent who beats their children, or, you know, that's another stereotype, but you know, there's, the guardian can be used in a whole bunch of different ways. The mentor, we did the episode on the mentor, the believer. That one is a really good one too, because they are so infirmly, that's not the right word. They're firmly entrenched. That's what I was wow, y'all, I'm not even drinking. This is tea.
Wow.
The town drunk.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I think I like this one a lot, because a lot of the time they end up having information that is beneficial to the main character, even though they're seen as like, oh, don't listen to him, like he's just the town drunk. Those are fun.
I love that.
Yeah.
The survivor, someone who's been through whatever and has survived and keeps surviving over and over, no matter what life throws at them.
Right.
The jock. Mm-hmm. The country bumpkin.
Cute. Yep.
The socialite.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's any number of things.
Yeah. Two other ones that I have noticed just recently in stuff that I've been reading and watching and stuff. So I was thinking about them, like the orphan character.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then also the ruler. So like a king or like an authority figure, like a president or whatever, mm-hmm. is another type of archetype.
Yeah. There's tons. You all should go just look on the internet and you'll come up with, it's so funny, because you'll see an article that says the 8 essential archetypes. The 12 essential archetypes.
I know, yeah.
201 archetypes. And I'm like, wow. And none of them are the same. I mean,
yeah. Right.
So we kind of talked about this, but why use the archetypes? They are immediately recognizable by your reader without any work on your part. Not that I'm saying that we should be lazy, but it's something that your reader can automatically connect with and understand what we're talking about.
Yeah.
They can contrast what we're trying to show about another character. So having a rich socialite character in the story to contrast what a poor character's world is like is a great way to highlight whatever it is you're trying to highlight. Shameless, again, because it's so fresh in my brain, uses this technique with Lip, you know, being from the hood, and he gets into MIT, and suddenly he's seen the world through different lenses.
Yes.
And people are just as screwed up on the rich side as they are on the poor side. So it's kind of a view into humanity as well, that just because you're rich doesn't mean you're a good person.
Right.
Assholes on both sides.
Everywhere. Yeah.
So that is, it's a great way to contrast to show what you're trying to do. It can be an exciting for your reader if you take a used trope and handle it in a way that hasn't been seen before. It makes the story unpredictable. It gets your reader sucked into it, because they'll be like, oh my God, I've never thought of it that way before.
Right. Yeah.
So
no, exactly.
Yeah.
I think another good point is that, you know, these archetypes provide kind of a blueprint for building well-defined characters.
That's true.
You know, whether they're heroes or villains or main characters or side characters or whatever, most of your characters that you'll have in your novel will probably fit into some kind of archetype.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just like a good blueprint to start with as you're building your characters. And then on top of that, I think a lot of writers probably, you know, create several characters who act exactly like the writer themselves or people they know or whatever. And archetypes, especially like you said, if you have a list of them in front of you, can help you avoid this. You know, you can look at which characters will better, there's a word for it, complement your main character, or be a better antagonist, or be a better enemy based on these archetypes.
Yeah. I mean, and like you said, that it can help you choose characters to get across whatever point that you are trying to get across. You know, a lot of times we have an overarching motif that,
like a theme.
Kind of thing. Yeah. That's the
word. Yeah.
And choosing a character from this archetype helps you as a skeletal outline, like you said, a blueprint in forming that.
Yeah.
So I think that's all I've got. Anything
that
more?
That's all I've got, but I do have an interview question and a sentence for y'all.
Okay.
So interview question, which archetype is your favorite? And I'm going to actually add on, which is your favorite to write?
I think the fool.
Oh, fair. Yeah. You do like the humor, and I think the fool often uses humor.
Yeah. I am definitely a humor, sarcasm, and that word came out of my mouth funny.
That was very weird.
I promise you all, I have not been drinking. But I have a lot of female funny characters too. It's just, I love that humor. And so the fool is probably my favorite one to write.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. I think mine is either the loner outcast or the con artist, but I don't think I've done too many con artists. So I think the loner outcast, because I've done a lot of those where my main character is, for whatever reason, people are like, oh, like, we don't want to like work with you because your magic is weird, or because you work for a mobster, or blah, whatever, you know, what have you. So I think probably the outcast one.
Yeah. Cause I'm thinking, I don't know that I've ever done a loner as a main character, because Beck was perfectly normal.
Yeah.
Just a normal upper middle class bookstore owner. Kata was a college student who worked part-time at her mom's magic shop. Those are the two most urban fantasies that I did.
Yeah. Mine, I think Louie counts as an outcast because of who she works for. And like what she does outside of society's bounds. In this book that I'm writing right now, that also really comes into clarification, because she's working with a police officer more. And he looks down on her because of who she works for and like what she does.
Mm-hmm.
So she's very much like the outcast aspect of her really comes into clarity with the second book. And then one that I haven't talked about very often, but the Remy book that I'm going to be writing at some point. She is also an outcast loner. So
I think Harper may be more of a loner, because she's also going to fall within the orphan stereotype. I mean, I'm going to try to not make it stereotypical, but so she has no immediate family. So she'll probably be loner, but I haven't gotten that far. She's still forming in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, neat.
And then you have a sentence.
I do have a sentence. Which is, she wanted to be a certain type of person. So good Ooh, luck I like with that.
That one. That makes my brain spark. My brain just sparked.
Well, go and write a sentence page for it.
I should do that. And then I just wanted to mention, we did have someone respond to one of our YouTube videos about the magic system that he set up. So
yeah, and it was super cool. I glanced at it before we hopped on to record this.
I haven't read it in detail, but I think it would be a great episode if people want to send us their magic systems or ideas about magic systems and how they create a magic system and that kind of thing. I think that would be a great episode to see what other writers out there do. I would love to hear it.
Absolutely.
So yeah, and he responded to us through YouTube, but you can email us. We've go to our website at eatdrinkwritepodcast.com. There's a link for our email there. There's a link for all of our social media there. We have Instagram, Twitter. I haven't been very active on anything with court driving me crazy this month.
Yeah.
Plus one of my associates had a death in her family. And so she has not been able to be here, and bless her heart. She should be coming home soon, but it's been a lot of work that I've been having to do. So I haven't been able to do much of anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, go check us out on our social media and stuff. Write us, talk to us, tell us jokes.
She really wants those jokes, y'all.
Yeah, I was very excited to find the ones I found today. They were right on point.
They were good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Yeah. So we will see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
I guess we'll be doing at some point soon. We haven't done a mini episode.
Yeah.
So send us ideas for that too.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Bye.